No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I'm joined by my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, and together we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. This week, we have a very special guest, Dr. Paul R. Brown, president of Zane State College in Ohio. Dr. Brown will talk to us about education in America and specifically discuss what he sees as the impact of the impending doubling of student loan interest rates on July 1 of this year. Before we get into our subject this week, however, I have some good news to report. The statehood bill that would grant equality to the 623,000 citizens of the District of Columbia picked up 12 new co-sponsors in the House this week. I want to thank these members for taking a stand for democracy and equal rights. They are Representative Bass of California, Bishop of Georgia, Cleaver of Missouri, Clyburn of South Carolina, Davis of Illinois, Fudge of Ohio, Jeffries of New York, Kelly of Illinois, Meeks of New York, Raymond of Louisiana, Thompson of Mississippi, and Wilson of Florida. Let's get started, and let me introduce my co-host, Kathleen Gomez. Hi, Kathleen. As always, thanks for helping get the conversation started.
Hello, Senator Brown, and I am speaking from the border of Arizona and Sonora, Mexico, so I want to make the audience, we kind of have a neat little partnership. You're in D.C., and I'm outside the Beltway, way outside the Beltway.
Yeah, way outside.
But anyway, our guest today is Dr. Paul Brown. He is the president of Zane State College in Zanesville, Ohio. Zane State has been selected as one of the top community colleges in America. Last year, Dr. Brown was named Person of the Year by the Daily Jeffersonian, his local newspaper, and just this week, he was honored with a national award in human resources for making his college a great place to work. Welcome, Dr. Brown, and thanks for being on our show.
It's a pleasure, Kathleen and Michael. It's always great talking to you both.
Well, great. We're so happy to have you. Dr. Brown, I know that Zane State has grown tremendously under your leadership. Can you talk about how important it is to have quality education that people can afford?
Yeah, I guess the best place to start is I think everybody knows that the United States compared to other countries in the world, we're losing ground as far as our number of our citizens that go on to higher education, number one, and then number two in the basic literacy and advanced skills area, such as the sciences, reading, writing, math, so those particular areas as well. In addition to that, though, there are, as far as jobs are concerned, and this is the implication of that, 2 to 3 million jobs are likely to go unfilled right now within the next 5 years just due to not having enough qualified workers. So those, those are the stakes for us not stepping up to the plate and not getting more of our citizens educated.
And you know, Dr. Brown, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I wanted to tell you that I just found out that, you know, Arizona, as far as the education in high school to go on to college. We're like the 48th in the state. But one of the things that amazed me was that math is not considered a requirement to graduate from high school, which, you know, I want to talk about the college yet, but to me, when I found that out, I was just floored. What is your take on that?
Well, you know, in our case, we've been involved in what's called Achieving the Dream. And Achieving the Dream is a national initiative that really identifies those students that are at high risk. And students at high risk are students of that come from poverty and students that of color. And what we really have to do is, among those two populations, really have to reduce the achievement gap. And in doing that, we collected a lot of data, and we found that the number one requirement, or the number one obstacle for graduating from college, is math. So math is a make it or break it course, and it's so important for students to be successful in college.
That's a great segue, because my question is that is about the interest rate that's about to change. As you know, the interest rate for government-backed student loans is about to double on July 1st from 3.4% to 6.8%. What kind of impact? I know you run a school, Paul, where a lot of people have student loans. So what kind of impact do you think this will have on enrollment and on your ability to bridge that gap that you just talked about?
Well, again, in addition to the skills gap, I think we have a real opportunity gap in this country. And that's what that's what's being addressed by the, either somebody can afford to go to college or they can't afford to go to college. Already there's a huge disparity between students that come from families that are affluent and their chances of, number one, going to college, and number two, completing college is, you know, like three or four times what it is for somebody in a lower economic category. So, I mean, that's one issue. The other issue is that we're talking about, students taking on more debt, and how the student now that graduates from college that takes out student loans, may take them a decade or more to pay back their indebtedness. So I think we're just creating a wider gap between those students that have and those students that have not. Those are some of the issues I think involved in that. You know, Pell, in our college, we're in Appalachia, so 90% of our students they qualify for some kind of financial aid. If they get Pell, they get $5,550 a year. Now, the average tuition for even 2-year colleges across the nation is about $9,000. So that means, nearly 40%, I guess about 40% of that, if you even go to a 2-year college, is you're going to have to take out about 50% in student loans. If you go to a public 4-year institution, you can double that amount. I mean, the average tuition for public 4-year colleges is $16,000 a year. So, our students are already taking out a tremendous amount of loans, and they're incurring a tremendous amount of debt, and it's going to take a good part of their earning careers after they're successful. Those are the ones that are successful. The ones that are successful are going to take, a long time to pay back those loans, and we're just, I believe, making a bad situation extremely worse by doubling the interest rate.
Well, Paul, Senator Warren of Massachusetts, in her very first piece of legislation, she proposed capping the student loan interest rate for Stafford loans at 0.75. And what blew me away is this is This, when I found out, this is the rate that the government loans money to banks, who turn around and charge us, what, 16 to 28% on our credit cards and give us no interest on our savings. They get it at 0.75%, 0.75. Do you think this is a good idea, and do you think it would really help kids going to Zane State or, you know, anywhere if they were to lower it to that kind of an interest rate?
If they were to lower the student interest rate to that level?
Yes.
I think it would be a huge incentive for students to go to college. You know, a lot of our states, and Ohio is one of them, you know, do not offer student tuition for students that go to two-year colleges. So, you know, their only source of income is either to take out loans or to get federal Pell grants to cover it. A lot of these students, you know, if they want to go to college, and a lot of them are on their own, then they have to, you know, cover, in addition to tuition and fees, they have to cover books, they have to cover child care. There's a lot of other things that they have to cover, their transportation back and forth to college. So all these things add to the cost of the direct and indirect costs for going to college.
Well, you know, I'd really like to get your input on this next question, and that is that I've been reading a lot of the kind of feedback that's been coming from people on this whole Elizabeth Warren idea. And one thing that really shocked me, but something that I heard over and over again on the comments pages of Time Magazine, for example, was that one of the criticisms of this idea is that if government makes student loans more affordable, colleges will just raise tuition. And so the student won't benefit from this. Can I get your reaction to that? Do you think colleges will raise tuition if they think that kids aren't going more into debt?
No, I really don't think that colleges, you know, that's the driving force behind colleges raising tuition. The driving force behind that is generally, it's the you know, the cost to remediate students, to send them to, first of all, to bring them up to college ready. I think a lot of colleges in this country, students come apply to college with a GED or with a high school credential diploma and are not college ready. So it takes a great deal of tutoring and mentoring you know, those kinds of support services to really have students be successful in the developmental sequence. That's reading, the core subjects is reading and English and math. So I think, you know, having staff on hand to support students in and out of the classroom to ensure that the quality of our instruction is there, to reach out to students through distance education, to mentor these students and make sure that our rates for success are going up. All those drive the cost of tuition and not, you know, the fact that students may be getting more money from the federal government. So, my take on that is the colleges, and I believe I speak for my colleagues when most of the colleges in this country are very good stewards of the funds that are provided to them. You know, just about all of those are very responsible, and therefore those increased costs will not have an impact on raising tuition. I know in Ohio, for example, there every year, because tuition is fairly high in Ohio for public 2-year, 4-year colleges. It's a little higher than the national average. We have our governors, last governor and this governor, have both put caps on the amount of tuition that the percentage of tuition that we can increase every year. And this year, for example, in two-year colleges, we can't go above raising our tuition and fees $100 for the entire year per student. That's our max. So there are, I think there are controls on the institutional level. There are also controls on the state level that are very cost conscious about tuition increases.
Well, I got to I'm sorry, Kathleen. I was just going to say that I was amazed. I was amazed at that response because that's something that never occurred to me that, you know, that people would think that. And I was also amazed to find out that student loan indebtedness at this point in our country stands at $1 trillion. That just seems like an amazing thing to me that the young people of the United States owe $1 trillion for their education, where in Europe most of the education is free. I'm sorry, Kathleen, go ahead.
Well, no, I mean, when you're, you know, I was just thinking in my mind, I was talking to my son, his tuition at University of Arizona is $10,000 a semester. So it's $20,000 just for tuition. And we were talking, and it can go from anywhere from $25,000 to $35,000, depending what kind of dorm, because they have different kinds of dorms, and, you know, whether you take the meal plan where you can eat more than once a day, and, you know, all that contributes, and then the textbooks, and, you know, you have to have Wi-Fi, all these things that you have to have, you know, can be anywhere from $25,000 to $35,000. And the thing that I was reading online was a lot of people were saying, well, maybe it's time to self-educate. But self-educating doesn't get you that job either, because I noticed for my age, which I hate to say, it was about 55, I was thinking of going to get a master's. I know I said it. I don't want to say it again. Anyway, I'm looking at $30,000 for 18 months, and I'm thinking, am I going to live that long that I'd be able to pay it off, and is it worth it? But so many jobs want a master's too. So not only are they looking at having to get a bachelor's degree, but they're also looking at having to get really a master's degree to continue. It's almost like now kind of the thing you have to do. Do you agree?
Yeah, I absolutely agree, Kathleen. And you know, one of the things that we have to keep in mind if we really focus on this opportunity gap that we have, that we have the majority of the people that are trying to get educated these days, or should get educated these days, get a better quality of life. A lot of those people are on their own. A lot of them are from middle and lower class, and you know, the economy hasn't been doing so good in the last couple of years. This all adds to the odds or the probability that reduces the odds of them going to college, reduces the odds and probability of them being successful.
I agree. I mean, I know I was talking with some friends, they're like, you know, you want to go into that debt, because I'm pretty much, I finally got my debt to reasonable, you know, kind of level. I mean, pretty low. And then, you know, I'm looking at like $28,000. Do I want to face that again? Because it's very difficult. I was reading something where like one student was going to school to get, I think it was, bioengineering or aerospace engineering, and he incurred something like, I think it was $35,000 worth of debt. And by the time he finished, it was now at $50,000. And that's when he went to go get a job, is when 9/11 happened and nobody was hiring. So then he ended up, it was at $60,000 and $70,000, and he was working 92 hours as a waiter and all that. And it just doubled and it kept on going. And I couldn't really read the story anymore because my heart I just felt so bad for this guy. It just really kind of, you know, sent me to a point where I couldn't read anymore without, like, just feeling totally, you know, where is it going to end?
Right. Well, absolutely.
Can I ask you a question, Kathleen? At your age, could you complete a master's degree before you retired?
I'm sorry. You're so lucky.
I had to put that in there.
You're so lucky. I'm here in Arizona, and you're way over there.
Absolutely. And I'm taking advantage of that.
It's never too late. Not even for you, Michael, at your age.
Yeah, thanks. I know that Zanesville, this is an important thing for me to discuss with you, and I want you to reflect on this for a minute. For those of you who might not have figured this out yet, Dr. Brown is my older brother. We're very, very proud of him because he's just done remarkable things in Zanesville, Ohio, with this college of his. I was honored to be a commencement speaker there last year, and I just saw how much his students loved him, loved the school, and as Kathleen mentioned, when we started, he was one of the people of persons of the year last year in his community. So I want you to talk for a minute. I know that Zanesville is an area that was hard hit by the national economic downturn, and I know that your college has added significantly to the local economic growth and recovery, and it continues to be an asset. And I want you to talk about that, and especially in the context of investment in education being an investment for all of us. Isn't it an investment for all of us?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, our mission is empowering people, enriching lives, and advancing the region. So, you know, if you empower people, then that leads to enriching their lives. You enrich their lives, you enrich the lives of the community. So we feel, for example, one of the things we take seriously within that mission is that we are not only trying to prepare students for the jobs of today and tomorrow, but it's also important for us to bring in those jobs into the community that would provide a good wage for our graduates. So we take the role of advancing our region very, very seriously. And in advancing the region, you advance the economy of the state. I can tell you in Appalachia, Appalachia has been the weakest economic link in our state for a long time. People talk about, the stereotypes of Appalachia, people being poor and people being uneducated, people not wanting education, people really working in menial jobs. Poor old Appalachia, that is the stereotype. Well, if you look at what's happening right now, if the energy industry and the gas and oil and the alternative energy sources and the renewable energy sources, a lot is happening in Appalachia that because of our vast natural resources that could provide the corner store for our region. Now, when we are one of the leaders in the state in the energy sector, energy training, when you look at that, we started looking at other areas of the country like Raleigh-Durham, one of the greatest international business hubs in the world globally is in Raleigh-Durham, Chapel Hill. And we looked at where they were 53 years ago and where we are in Appalachia right now, and there's a tremendous amount of comparison. 53 years ago, there was nothing in Raleigh-Durham, North Carolina, other than tobacco, textiles, and agriculture, generally. The leaders of that community at that time said, we don't know why anybody would do business here. Look at what they've become. I think that's what we're striving to become in Appalachia. With the advantage of the corner store being the energy sector. So from there, developing a diverse economic base and corridor that can turn around. Now, if we do that, we're turning the weakest economic link in the state into the greatest economic asset, and that's what will happen, what could happen when you start to educate your population.
Well, you know, and I think that's the whole point of this discussion, is that just like the federal government wants to invest in banks and get the money out there and get the economy growing, I think the best investment you can make in America is in Americans and in our young people. And so I know that you're doing a great job out there and making that a reality for so many people. And I think we have to continue to do that, and we have to find creative ways to make it easier for people to get education, not harder. So
you're absolutely right. We're teaching people how to fish. You remember that old proverb, you know, right. Give a person a fish and they eat for a day. You teach them how to fish and they eat for a lifetime.
That's true.
That's what we're doing. We're teaching people how to fish.
And one thing I'd just like to say, you know, so many people say to me, well, what can we do? Don't you think that anyone listening to our show should make sure they call their legislature, their congressman and their senator in their home district and get the number for the D.C. district and call and say enough is enough. It's time to start, you know, stop putting this burden on the backs of our youth and our future, and we want you to do something about the student loan and not let it increase. If they can't do the 0.75, which I don't understand why, then they at least stop it until they figure out something that makes more sense.
Absolutely. Well, I want to thank you, Dr. Brown, not only for coming on the show and giving us your important perspective, but also for all the hard work you do to improve your community and give students a top-notch education. Like I say, when I was at Zane State, I was so impressed by how much the community and the students embraced you, and you really are a shining example of what a good, affordable education in America can be. So thanks so much for coming on the show, and I hope you'll come back so we can talk more.
Okay. Love to do it, Michael, Kathleen, thank you. And thanks for what you're doing for education and in promoting statehood for the disenfranchised of Washington, D.C. It's absolutely critical.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. And America, you've heard what we have to say on the issue, so now let's hear what you have to say. Don't be afraid to call in. Please call us and tell us what you think. The toll-free number is 888-429-5471. Again, it's 888-429-5471.
That's right. Let's hear from you. America's talking, and we're listening. So we're going to take a short break and play a song from John Mayer, which has become an anthem of sort for our new generation. Here is Waiting on the World to Change. Back in a few minutes. And we're back. As always, we're depending on the next generation to change the world. So shouldn't we help them? Tell us what you think. Call us. We want to know how you feel about this. You know, one thing I've got to say, it's at moments like this that I'm proud to be a Democrat. There's two pieces of legislation, one before the Senate and one a companion piece that was offered in the House by a congressman from Massachusetts, John Tierney. And both these pieces of legislation we've described to you as the Warren bill and a companion bill that would lower the interest rates, and not one co-sponsor who's a Republican. 24 co-sponsors, all Democrats. If you're a Republican out there, call and tell us why this is. Go ahead, Kathleen.
No, I think it's true. I mean, and it was blocked in the committee. Every Republican voted against it. And I don't get it because, okay, I must say that I've had issues living in Arizona with the Democratic Party where I am at. I probably get a lot of, if anyone's listening in my area out there, they'll probably get mad at me. I don't care. The Democratic Party is very corrupt. I have become an independent because I see what's happening at this local level. But if Republicans want to get rid of that label that they just, that's a party that just does not care, this is an issue they could, I would think, feel good about and would somehow understand that if you want the young and all the different, you know, ethnic communities to vote for you, at least give the youth a fighting chance. I wonder how they would look at it if they were starting out as Republicans and had a $50,000 debt. I mean, or maybe they've never had it. I don't know. Are they the party of the rich that they don't understand what this means as you're going out to get a low-paying job? Because nobody ever really gets that high-paying job out of college. You and I, Michael, I mean, you got a master's, and we were there down in the, right. You know, the dungeon. So that doesn't happen right off the bat. And as you can't pay off that debt, it just increases. So this would seem such an opportunity for them to do the right thing for anything. I mean, just for selfish reasons, at least. Do the right thing.
I got to tell you, from the gridlock in Washington these days, it seems like all these guys are interested in is saying, not Obama. What do you want to do? What's your principle? What do you stand for? I stand for that which the president does not stand for. And that, to me, means that they're bankrupt. They're out of ideas. They have no soul. You know, in Arizona is the perfect example. You had a senator from Arizona named Barry Goldwater.
Yes.
I never agreed with anything this man said, but he was honest. He had a set of principles that were the same when he started in the Senate and when he finished in the Senate. He never wavered. It wasn't about opposing the other guy. It was about standing up for something. And I don't see what these guys are standing up for anymore. You know, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, when I posted this on my Facebook page, I got a lot of people responded, you know, because they had all gone to college and they were, you know, my age and they were still had debt or had kids going into college. And one woman responded and said, oh, you know, it's just awful. My son was going to George Mason University and he's got a $36,000 debt. The next thing she said was, oh, but I would never support anything Elizabeth Warren did. And I thought, what does it matter? If Rush Limbaugh was to introduce this legislation and I don't like him, I would still support the legislation. Who cares who introduces it? What is important is the outcome and who it impacts. And I think that's the problem. It has become, you know, when I was on the Hill, I tell this story a lot to people. There was a young lady that I knew, and we were on the opposite side. She worked for the Republican Party. I worked for the Democratic Party. And we were on the opposite sides of almost everything. But we loved music, and we loved the kind of off, the kind of funky music that not too many people liked. Like Echo and the Bunnymen.
Yes.
Remember, you never knew about. But we would go and we would listen to music together. And we had a friendship. And so while we respected each other's viewpoints, we never called each other names. We never made it our whole goal to be mean or to do anything than be respectful of each other. And that's what's unfortunately, I think is happening. I mean, I learned that you respect your president no matter who it was. I didn't like Ronald Reagan. I respected him. I didn't like Bush. I respected him. And now I hear the youth when they're on this opposite party because they're taking the lead from what they see, where it's, I'm a Republican. I'm not going to support anything a Democrat does. I don't care. That's just the way it is. And I don't understand that because look where it's gotten us.
Well, you know, it's funny that you should say that because Bob Dole came out last week. There's another Republican who I always respected, and he came out and he said he didn't understand the gridlock. He said they weren't perfect, but they got their job done when he was up there. And, you know, you're talking about comments that you've got. I'd like to read a comment that I came across in a Time article. I can't even believe that people think this way, that they don't understand. Some guy wrote into Time magazine, interest rates are determined by risk. You can't offer free credit to high-risk borrowers. We did this already in the housing debacle. We let everyone has housing as their right. we lent loans to people who could never pay them back at cheap rates, and this led to the subprime debacle in 2008. Don't do it again. I can't believe that there are people out there that think that the subprime loans and the housing debacle were a result of us trying to provide affordable housing. They weren't. It was a matter of bankers who were greedy, who wanted to make the most money off the most people, and that's what got us in the trouble. And we bailed them out at $700 billion, and we're still loaning them money at 0.75, which is nine. We're loaning it to students at nine times that rate. The average American student that borrows money gets out of school $26,000 in debt, and the federal government makes 36 cents profit on every dollar that they lend out. So we're making profits on kids, we're supporting banks, and we can't get the Republicans in Congress to stand up and say this is wrong. We should at least treat our children and the future of our country the same way we treat our bankers who have let us down,
I know.
Frankly.
And I think also kind of it comes down to us as a community and as the public or as the citizens, because we have decided that nothing we do matters. You know, oh, I can't make any kind of an impact. I can't change anything. And I wrote to my Facebook friends. I said, you know, what does it take to get you to get off Facebook or at least maybe go on Facebook and see if you can see your legislator Republican and say enough is enough? I mean, when do we decide that we have the impact to make the change? And that's what gets me really frustrated, because everyone should call their congressman and senator in their home district and be very verbal, ask for the aide who is responsible for the student loan issue, get their name and tell them they want to tell their leader that they want to change. And then you got to do it in the DC office also, because that's where it's also taken note. I worked on the Hill. Believe me, when an office gets 100 phone calls a day or 100 emails a day or whatever in their home district and in the national office, let me tell you, they notice. They notice because they know that it depends on the vote. And if we became more active and more involved and realize it does make a difference. I don't know what I can say to people. I worked in that and I saw it makes a difference when you call. So this attitude that you can't do anything is just almost, I think, we're responsible for what is happening because we won't get involved.
Well, I think this is really an excellent point. If you can sit on the computer all day and tell me what you had for lunch and, you know, and the fact that your kid learned how to ride a bike, or, you know, send me pictures of your dog.
Yes,
why
the
can't
dog
you?
Is big.
Yeah, you know, I mean, if you've got time to dress up your Labrador Retriever, then you should have enough time to contact your representative and say, yeah, let's make this investment in our youth. Let's make this investment in our future. You know, we're all in this together, and we all talk about economic growth, and we're worried about the Chinese coming and taking over America and all this stuff, but then we don't want to invest in it, and it's just crazy. This particular piece of legislation by Elizabeth Warren has been supported by dozens of colleges and universities, including MIT, the American Federation of Teachers, and the Nobel Prize laureate Joseph Stiglitz, who won the Nobel Prize in Economics in 2001, All these people have come out and supported this plan, and all the Republicans are doing is stonewalling. There have been over 1 million signatures that have gone on a petition supporting this legislation. And I think you know where some of these websites are, Kathleen. Yes. So we should give people that information, because you should. I've already signed on to the one on moveon.org, and people should go and sign on.
Yes, and let me say this regarding Facebook. To all those people who are playing Candy Crush, which I don't know what the heck that is, but I don't know how many times I get invited to play Candy Crush, or it's something like that. Don't do it for a day. Take this stuff down and go on these sites and sign your name and call your congressman and your senator in your home, in your district, in your state, and at the federal office. Okay, there's about four of them. Now, there is the Campaign for America's Future. And if you don't quite get the site that I give you, you can always Google these names too. Campaign for America's Future. Their petition had 33,666, and it's campaign.dailycause, which is KOS.com. Democracy for America has 106,512 signers, and it's www.democracyforamerica.com. Now, there's another one called Credo. And that has 83,876 signatures. It's org.credo.action.com. MoveOn.org has 441,632. Their goal is 450,000. So anyone listening to this, get your son, get your grandmother, get everyone in your family, and use their names, even if you're the one that puts it in. Who cares? We want them to get a goal of 450,000. They're at 441,000 right now. Progressive Change Campaign Committee, and that is at act.boldprogressives.org. They have 623,560 signatures, and their goal is to get 625,000. That's just less than 2,000 they need. Let me see. I was just looking at, you know, I was amazed at all the things that I saw. But, you know, college students will have 900% more debt than the biggest banks on Wall Street do interest, I think that is, to borrow money. So it's just amazing the numbers you come across. It's like, you know, you think this can't be right. You know, it's just too far out there. These numbers are so huge with these kids are going to go through. And like when I was talking about that other gentleman, I was reading his story where he just had, like so many of us have had, a hard time finding a job. When you have that interest, it just doubles every year, 2 years, 3 years. I think after like about 10 years, he was at 100,000. He was getting the collection agencies calling him. He was working harder and harder at a minimum paying job, because you know how it is. If you're working at minimum paying jobs and you try to get a job that pays more, they want experience. And they want experience in that field. So if something happens in your life that you're not able to plug in to that stream, you know, going the right time at the right pace, and that's happened to so many people I know, you're going to have this burden for the rest of your life until probably you die. And that's just not right. That's not what America's about. And I don't see how that is good for our future.
Well, it's not what America's about. And let me tell you, this is what Elizabeth Warren had to say. We shouldn't be profiting from our students drowning in debt while we're giving a great deal to banks. That's just wrong. And you're right, and she's right. That's not the American way to do things. Next year, the United States government will make $34 billion they'll collect $34 billion on student loans. Why should we be making money off of these kids when we're letting banks borrow money at 0.75? It's just ridiculous. And I got to tell you, my personal opinion is that there are Republicans out there that are listening to this, but they won't call in because the position is indefensible. You know, I've gotten lots of responses on the internet to Warren's legislation. So I know these guys are out there, and I know they're on the internet, and I wish one of them would call in, because I'd be happy to discuss this with them. I just don't understand it. It's, I had a student loan. I had a thing called an NDSL. And Kathleen, you know my story, but let me tell it to America. I put myself through college. I was an orphan. My brother, sister, and I all put ourselves through college. And I had an NDSL loan, which I got at 2%. And the interest didn't start accruing until I graduated from graduate school. As long as I was in school, there was no interest. So I had the money for 6 years before the interest even started occurring. And then when I got my first job, I think my loan payments were something like $75 a month for a couple of years. I could handle it, and I paid every dime back to the government. Today, 17% of people on student loans default. And one of the reasons they default is because the interest rate is too high. They can't, it's the same reason they walk away from a mortgage they can't afford. So we'd get more of the money back if we lowered the interest rate. And it makes, I'm sorry, it makes, so it makes sense for the government, it makes financial sense, and it certainly makes sense for our future.
And I also want to add that, you know, after Warren's bill was defeated, there is that I think it was maybe Thursday, was it, or Wednesday, that the Republicans blocked legislation sponsored by Senator Jack Reed, a Democrat from Rhode Island, and Senator Tom Harkin, a Democrat from Iowa, to maintain the interest rates at 3.4% for 2 years. Okay, yeah. So, all right, you're not going to give the students the break they deserve like you give the banks. At 0.75, so keep it at 3.4, which is unbelievable because that's so high, so that you don't see this go at 6.8% July 1st, and that's what's going to happen. So everybody's got to wake up, and this is, I think, one of those monumental times that you have to make a change. It's like a critical mass. If we all do it, if we all get our neighbors or our relatives to do it, we can make a change. But this is serious. It is going to be 6.8 July 1st. That's like, what, 3.5 weeks away?
Yeah.
Double. You know what? I'd love it if they made the banks pay 10%. Okay, whatever. I just can't get it through my head, this 0.75 for banks who charge me if I miss one payment, my interest goes to 28%.
Well, and you know, I've been getting comments. There's been comments that have been brought that have been coming on to me online that say things like loans are based on risk, and students are more risky because the discount rate is collateralized by banks and it's loaned to them overnight. Well, I got something to say about that. George Bush gave $700 billion $700 billion to banks. So from where I sit, they're not a good credit risk. They went belly up on $700 billion in bad debt, and we had to get them out of that situation. And a majority of Senate Republicans voted for that legislation to bail out the banks, and now they won't sit. I mean, I'm not going to be a Pollyanna about it and lie about it. Most Democrats voted for it too. But you know what? At least the Democrats are willing to step up to the plate and give kids the same break they gave those people on Wall Street that almost destroyed our economy.
And that was in what year? That was 2008. So, because yeah. I know everyone likes to say, oh, Obama is the one that bailed out the banks. Well, you know, yeah. Bush did that before too. And let's be fair. And for any of you Republicans out there, we will treat you with respect. Like I said, I'm independent. I believe in hearing the other person's viewpoint, because either it's going to help me understand you or it's going to make my viewpoint. I just understand why I believe the way I do. But we're not going to treat you disrespectfully. We won't call you pinhead. We won't call you all the names that I've heard on some of these shows that just make me sick. Yeah. We're going to treat you with respect. But, you know, you need to be able to understand and explain why you think that you shouldn't give students a break.
Yeah, and you got to keep in mind that nationwide last year, this was a statistic that just blew me away, as bad as our economy is. Nationwide last year, student debt rose at a higher rate than credit card debt. What message does this send to kids? And starting out.
And you know how this started us was last week we interviewed two students from the University of Arizona, and it kind of broke my heart when the Zoe said, you know, I'm incurring this debt, but will there be a job that I can pay the debt off? I don't know that it will be there. And you know, that's a lot of stress and a lot of worry to put on kids at a time when they should be very positive and excited to get out in the workforce to make a change. And, you know, she even said that she was so discouraged by the way politics was going that she would not think of going into politics, even though she's a political science major. And to me, we need that person who, you know, Zoe said she was somebody who went by the rules and believed and was raised on doing the right thing and being fair. We need those people in D.C. so bad that it just, you know, I almost want to go meet her personally and beg her, please, please don't give up. We need people like you to be up there to make these kinds of decisions.
Well, and that's absolutely right. And you and I, Kathleen, when we started, when we were that age, if you can remember that far back, we knew a lot of those people, right? We worked for Jimmy Carter, and Jimmy Carter wasn't the greatest president in the history of the United States, but he was somebody that cared about people, and you cared about people, and I cared about people, and a lot of the people that got involved cared about people. Well, this is my last slam on the Republican parties, because I'm not quite as nice as Kathleen, although if you do call in, we will treat you with respect. But Mitt Romney gave a commencement speech the other day, and he told people to marry young, under the age of 30, to get married and have a quiver full of kids. And I say to you, Governor, if you want kids to get married young and have a lot of kids, don't saddle them with a lot of debt. Because when they can't support those kids, you and your party will walk away from them as quickly as you walked up to them. So let's give kids an even break. And that's my last word for the night. Kathleen, you want to say something?
Yes, I was at the Democratic Convention, and I remember we were together. We were listening to Susan Molinari talk. She worked for Google. And I raised a question about how in my day I thought a bachelor's degree was enough, and now I was looking at the fact that master's degrees was needed to go forward. And remember what she said? She said, I would have you tell young women, don't get married. Think about what you need to do in your education and do that first. Go to get your bachelor's degree, then get a master's, then get a job, and then have kids. And I remember sitting there going, yeah, but like, you know, how does that help me? Because I have, you know, two going and one's in college, one's going. And what am I going to do to be able to help them so that they can have a debt? So it's just amazing. And Susan Molinari was Republican. I like her very much. But I found that fascinating. Mitt Romney's telling him to have lots of babies. And Susan Molinari is saying to women, don't get married and have babies until you get your education.
And that's the final word. Yeah. And we will see you next week. And we're going to keep this discussion going until we get this done. As Kathleen said, it's too important to abandon.
Yes. Thank you,
Thanks
America.
Thanks for listening.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.